Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome to the Gravity Leadership Podcast. Gravity Leadership is a growing network of people who believe the center of the Christian life is the love of God revealed in Jesus Christ, and that learning to take love seriously is vital for how we practice discipleship, mission, and leadership. The Gravity Leadership Podcast explores, in practical ways, how to root our lives and our leadership in this love that holds all of us and everything together.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Gravity Leadership Podcast. Once again, I'm here. My name is Ben Sternke.
My name is Christy.
We should write this out. We should write out like what we say at the beginning of every podcast for people. I feel like we do this every time where it's just like, we just sort of stumble into it.
I know.
And then it's awkward.
Most listeners know our names. So
I know. But it's true. Just in case this is the first episode. We're just saying hi. My name's Ben. And I'm here with Christy. Hi, Christy.
Hi. I'm glad we're here.
I am too. We are in the height of summer here.
Yes, we
are. This podcast is releasing on July 20th, which, do you know what's special about July 20th?
No, but I bet you'll tell me.
Take a guess. I will tell you.
I have no.
Do you want to take a guess?
It's Lemonade Day. It's National Lemonade Day.
That's a great guess, but it might be, but that's not what I was thinking of. It's my wedding anniversary, and this year, July 20th, we're obviously recording this before July 20th, but on July 20th, when this podcast episode releases, it will be my 25th wedding anniversary.
Come
to
on!
My wife, Deb.
Isn't that amazing. You need to drink some lemonade and say
cheers.
I'm going to
totally drink some lemonade on my anniversary, a party time.
Are you celebrating?
Is that silver? Or do I have that wrong?
I don't know, but it's a lot of years.
Silver.
Dog years. I mean, it's
in
like
dog years,
beyond.
Yeah, that's incredible.
Are you celebrating somehow big? Big trip at least
right
a night
now,
away?
As we record this, we're not doing a big trip. We're not doing a huge thing, but we're trying to find, like a little Airbnb somewhere, just get away for a night or two. We'll have just gotten off vacation. And so it's sort of like, you know, I feel a little bad taking like yet more vacation, but hey, it's our 25th wedding.
Hey, for 25 years, totally worth it.
Yeah.
That's so great. Well, congratulations.
Yep. Thank you. Speaking of lemonade and the height of summer.
Oh my goodness.
You got a story, right?
Okay.
About your kids?
Listen, my kids are really wanting to make. I have 5 kids, and my younger ones really want to make money because my older one has a lawn mowing business and he's making bank this summer, mowing the whole neighborhood, right? And so my little ones are like, I want to make money. And so they decided to do this lemonade stand. So I go to Walmart, we buy 3 gallons of lemonade pre-made.
Oh my.
Right?
Okay.
Yeah. And have a little table, and we go actually like a block away from our house so that there's like a main road there, and they have some cups. And I told them, it's also like this lesson in economics, but I told them they were going to have to pay me back for the lemonade and the cups. Take a guess how much each of them made in 3 hours of selling these 3 gallons of lemonade.
3 hours, 3 gallons of lemonade.
Boys.
I don't know much. 2 boys. I made you guess something earlier, and so
right. I know. That's why I'm making you do it.
It's only fair.
Yeah.
So put me on the spot. I'm gonna guess they made $100. I really don't know.
They made over $100. They each made $57 each. $57. I was like, I need to quit my job and just sell lemonade.
Just sell lemonade.
That's bananas. Oh my goodness! And of course, you know. my my one son was like, I think they gave us tips because we're so cute, Mom.
Learning.
I was like, oh, learning, yeah, cute factor totally helps. But yeah they're making bank selling lemonade. So now every day they want to sell lemonade. I'm like, no, that can be like, you know, once every other week maybe or something.
Occasion. Yeah.
A special thing. Yeah. So. Yeah.
We'll have to find out when people won't give them $57 every single day. If they're out there every single day, they'll be like, all right, calm down. Yeah.
No, but maybe we'll figure out when National Lemonade Day really is and then do it on that
day. I'm sure it's a thing, right?
I'm sure it is too. And if it's not, we'll make it a thing.
Uh-huh.
You're going to look it up?
You're going to
look
it up. Yep. National Lemonade Day. It's Friday, August 20th.
Okay. August 20th. Guess what?
It's a month from now.
We're going to set our calendars. That's amazing.
National Lemonade Day 2021 in the United States. You can look it up on the internet if you have that.
Well, you were in this interview that's about to be played, but I was not. So tell us about Mandy Smith.
Mandy is wonderful, is the first thing I'll say about Mandy. She is, we've known her, like last week we talked about knowing Matt Alexander for a long time. We've also known Mandy Smith for a long time through the same church networks that we were both part of, both Matt, Tebby, and I. And so Mandy, up until very recently, was a pastor in Cincinnati. She recently moved back to Australia, where she's from, with her family. And she's just wonderful. We've interviewed her once before about her previous book, The Vulnerable Pastor, and she's just great. She ended up like pastoring us on the podcast, you know, on the previous one, like, you know, prophetic words and things like that. It was like we're doing church. It was really great.
You went to church. I love it.
We did. Yeah. And this interview felt the same way. She's just got a beautiful presence about her, a very humble and wise voice that if I was not a pastor and I lived in the town where Mandy was pastoring, I'd probably go to her church. She's brilliant. And bonus, like we're talking about her book. Her new book is called Unfettered, Imagining a Christ-like Faith Beyond the Baggage of Western Culture. And it's got a 2x2 matrix in it, which that's one of my favorite things. A 2x2 matrix. In our training, we've got the Grace and Truth matrix. But I'm always drawing these, you know, in my journal. If I think of something, you know, that all of that kind of thing. Like two things that are usually opposed to each other, that actually there's a synthesis if you imagine it in a new way. That's kind of what a 2x2 matrix does. So I really appreciated that. I don't know if we talked about it on the interview, but she talks about sort of being both unafraid to be powerless and unafraid to be powerful. Ooh. It's kind of her little matrix, which allows us to be empowered, but also honor the limits of our humanity. So it's kind of what the book is about. It's really it's kind of a model of discernment that tracks really well with our own discipleship wheel that people get trained in Gravity Leadership Academy. So she's great.
That's so good. Somebody just recently asked me, what is my relationship with power? Sounds like it go right in with what she's talking about. And we had a great discussion because I think it's a really good question to ask. And so
it's huge. Yeah, she deals with it in a particular way here in this book. But yeah, that's feels like the awareness of power and how we wield it, you know, is a really, really key discipleship issue.
Yeah.
And cultural issue. So anyway, let's get into the interview. Let's listen to Mandy.
Sounds good.
Mandy Smith, welcome back to the Gravity Leadership Podcast.
Yeah, it's so good to be back with you guys.
Yeah, lovely to see you again. Have we done one or two episodes with you in the past?
I want to say one. I think the last one was about the Vulnerable Pastor.
The Vulnerable Pastor, yeah. Mm-hmm. That was, you know what? Why I was thinking we did it twice is we did a rebroadcast of that episode because it was one of my favorites from the year.
Oh, that's cool.
We were doing a little like rebroadcast of some of our favorites over Christmas break or something like that. So anyway, that was the one I think where you prophesied over Matt at the end of it. Yes. Do you remember that?
I think I did. Was it about Sabbath?
Oh my gosh.
I think it might have been.
I better remember because I remember it striking me as I listened to it several times.
Usually, yeah, either that or something to do with gender. I can't remember what it was, but I'd love to. I do remember that now. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, just let her rip if you get another one for me.
Yeah. Yeah. Just let's be open to the spirit.
Oh, man. That was probably rather awkward. I'm sorry about that.
Oh, no. It was so good.
It was lovely. It was so good. That's one of the reasons it was one of my favorites.
Oh, okay. Maybe I'll put you on the spot this time.
Well, maybe. I do enjoy a good prophetic word.
I have no plans at this point. Just tell me.
Okay. All right. Yeah, don't get your hopes up. No, Mandy, I think it is. I mean, we're kind of getting into things before we even introduce you, which is fine. You're an old friend. So, but I think it's one of the things I most appreciate about you is that you embody in real time the content that we're interviewing you about. You embody vulnerability in real time, you know, to the extent that we can, you know, do some of that. So anyway, I'm appreciative of that aspect of who you are.
Yeah. When you're writing a book about vulnerability and then this next book about childlikeness, you have to, well, my website is called The Way is the Way for that reason, that there's an integrity that is required of you. And actually the first draft of my most recent book was an argument for childlikeness, a very grown up argument for childlikeness. I realized, you know, it was lacking in integrity. And as I had to find the integrity of the work, I had to find the integrity of myself as well to set aside my own fear that maybe to put some really important ideas out in the world, I might have to do it in a way that they thought were not important. And that was a part of kind of my own healing as well. And I think what made the book more true to its own self.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's harder work than just talking about stuff.
I know.
I'd prefer to just talk about stuff.
Oh, me too, Mandy. That's why I think I admire what you do. Well, the book that we're referring to is called Unfettered, and the subtitle that you were referring to used to say an argument for childlikeness, but the new one is Imagining a Childlike Faith Beyond the Baggage of Western Culture. So it's a new. It's out now. Yeah, is that right?
Just came out in May.
From Brazos. And it's a book about sort of seeking to disentangle Christianity from its imaginative captivity to Western culture. Yes?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And there's two statements in there that I think that sum up your habitual ways of... two statements that you say sum up our habitual ways of being in the West. One is, I think, therefore I am. And then the other one that I hadn't considered before is, I do, therefore I am. Mm-hmm. I'm wondering if you can expand on the ways that these kind of show up for us.
Yeah. Yeah, we've talked more about the Cartesian, you know, defining ourselves as rational beings, which then does a lot of damage to our own selves, kind of chopping us into thinking, feeling, and body. You know, our body is here, our feelings are here, our thoughts are there. And then also watching how much we are products of the Industrial Revolution as well, that we really define ourselves by how much we produce. And just try taking a break and you'll feel all of these fears that if we stop for a while, then the world might fall apart or we might lose everything. And so, I think those things have sadly also come into the way that we do faith in the West, and they're very Western things, but they're not very Christian things. Not that thinking by itself is wrong, but that God has not made us only thinking creatures and wants to engage with us with everything, with every part of who we are. And the funny thing is, as soon as I realized that, my first thought was, I need to think about this so I can fix it, which is just perpetuating both of those again.
Yeah.
So it's a very strange thing to even change our posture and our habits to say maybe our salvation or our release from that Western habit, those Western habits, is to have a totally different habit entirely, which, it's hard work.
Yeah.
Well, the work is to stop working so hard.
Yeah, right. I was going to say something like that. We can't think our way out of our captivity to thinking.
Exactly. Work our way out of our captivity to working.
That's right. Yeah. So you talk about, in the book, you talk about that as childlikeness, and you kind of talk to us about how childlikeness then contrasts with these two ways of being. Like, what is it about childlikeness that made it seem like an apt metaphor for you into these new ways of being?
And I wish I could tell you this was something I like totally came across by myself. This was something that just kind of knocked my feet from under me. You know, it came first by experiencing something on a Sabbath or a sabbatical and just devoting myself to being like a child for 8 weeks because I had nothing else to do. And then realizing, well, this is really significant transformative stuff. This is whimsy and wonder and so much more. And so then I had to figure out what on earth is going on here? Why is this actually threatening some of my comfort to be like a child? And comfort with looking in control and impressing people and, you know, all the things that I like to have. And so as I started to explore it more, I started to realize, wow, maybe there's more to this claim that Jesus makes that we can't enter the kingdom unless we become like children. And it's surprising how little has been written about that in serious theological circles, even though, like he says,
isn't that interesting?
The kingdom, like you can't get into the kingdom. That's, we're spending so much time trying to figure this out. And and it's almost like we heard him and we're like, yeah, nah, that's ridiculous, Jesus. We got to find a better way than that. You can't get into important things by doing such silly things, you know? So I think it also is an interesting sign of how little we regard children and how we usually assume, oh, to be a childlike just means to be always in awe and always feeling the wonder. And I think that's a part of what it means to be childlike. But when we were children, we didn't only define ourselves as thinking beings. We engaged with our whole selves with courage. You know, we listened to our instincts. We listened to our emotions. We listened to our bodies and we listened to our thoughts. And we were very relational. We were engaged with nature. We've done this before. We can do it again. And then also we didn't think that everything was up to us. Like we knew we had some agency and we did the best we could, but we weren't surprised that we didn't run the world. You know, you got up in the morning and you heard your parents already in the kitchen making your breakfast and the radio already humming and you just joined something that was already at work. And so I think those two things were encouraging to me to remind me that we have done this before and children, I genuinely admire children. They're incredibly honest and courageous and present. They're just so open. And I think that's really what Jesus is inviting us into, to know we're not complete in ourselves and to be unashamed of that is serious.
So we can't think our way out of our captivity to thinking. We can't work our way out of our captivity to doing. But that doesn't invalidate the goodness of thinking or the goodness of working.
Oh, no.
Right? The goodness of doing. And the childlike posture is one where we're free to think. Mm-hmm. We're free to have a thought because we're also engaged with our whole selves. We're also taking our emotions seriously and we're taking our bodily sensations seriously and we're taking nature and creation seriously. And then we're also free to be an agent. We're also free to work. We're also free to produce something. But it's because we're not a slave to that production. It's because we are cognizant of the fact that our production is not the end all be all.
Right.
Not everything is dependent upon it.
Right.
That we're participating in something we don't get to control. We don't get to manage. And we don't have to, thank God.
Right. And I think, you know, when you, those that I think therefore I am and that I do therefore I am, those instincts, I think have a big part in why we're all so burned out and anxious and depressed and doubting. Like, you know, the deconstruction everybody's talking about, I think it's because they're still stuck in trying to figure it out with their minds. And meanwhile, they're not trusting, well, I shouldn't say they, we aren't listening to, like, God's bombarding us constantly with his wonders and his beauty and his kingdom all around us. And if we're only, like, I'll only trust it if it's right in this small part of myself, then we just wear our this one little part of ourselves out and are kind of blind and deaf to all the other parts of our own selves and of what God's doing. I say in the book, you know, the yoke of the world is respond. So problem, respond, question, respond. And even in the church, sadly, I see that so much. And instead, what I found and what Jesus describes in his own description of his yoke is rest, receive, respond. And I think this is a wonderful way to get over the it's all up to me, it's all up to God kind of ping pong. Like I think we do one of those most of the time.
And
we think, well, this isn't right. It seems to be all up to me right now. God's supposed to be involved somehow, so maybe it's all up to God. And we just go back and forth, which neither of which really requires any engagement with God.
Yeah.
But the rest, receive, respond is what Jesus invites us to with his yoke. Like what a crazy thing that he says, come to me, all you are weary and heavy laden, and I will give you rest. And you're like, oh, great, it's all up to you, God. And then he's like, take my yoke upon me, upon you and learn from me. And you see, he's saying, you know, join in the mission with me that I'm already on. And there's a strange kind of rest even in that.
Yeah.
And and there's actually a fruitfulness that comes from that kind of rest and receiving and responding because you're joining in a work already done. You're not desperately searching for new ideas and energy separate from him, but you're tapped into the source. I sometimes imagine that yoke, you know, it's a double yoke that Jesus is carrying as well. It's not like I'm taking off my yoke and putting it on you. It's, you know, we're all good 3DM people. I remember Mike Breen's pictures of double yokes and that, you know, he bears it and invites us to come with him. And I almost imagine the abide in me vine kind of image is somehow merged with that yoke, that like to connect to that yoke, it's just like, it's a connection to him as well. It's not a dead yoke. It's also like a way to be a branch in the vine that's constantly connected to the source of all the creativity, all the energy, all the comfort, all the ideas, all the stuff that we're desperately trying to find in ourselves. And so I have to say that the more that I've practiced this way of life, I have been more productive, more fruitful, written more articles, like all the things I was trying so hard to do by myself. And they're not necessarily the things I plan to do. Like I've just had ideas and I've just had energy and I've just had enthusiasm and courage and comfort and guidance that I never, ever had before that I was trying so hard to do in my own strength, you know. So not that you can do it for the sake of that.
Here's my new plan to be productive.
It's not effective. It was actually a dying to my productivity. And suddenly there was this source of things that I wasn't expecting. But it's really scary to say if I stop working so hard and trying to find all these ideas, will I be like, I think there's some strongholds around some of this stuff.
Yes.
tell us you are going to become nothing and people, you will have nothing to contribute and people will not have any regard for you. And that's the end of your productive life.
Right.
Spoken as someone who's heard the voices saying things like that. Yes. Yep. Yeah. Yeah. So I so appreciate that. Especially I want to highlight what you said that, our ping ponging back and forth between it's all up to me, I got to get this done, and okay, God's gonna, I don't know, God's got this, you know, that kind of thing. Neither one demands any relationship with God or interaction or participation.
Yeah.
One is just this like, you know, hands up, okay, I'm gonna do what I want because God's gonna do what he wants. I don't know.
Yeah.
And then the other one is like, well, God help me with my stuff here. I got a bunch of stuff to do, but it's not, we're just asking for like some fuel, you know, or some resource. We're treating God as a resource in that mode. But what you're inviting us into in this rest,
receive, respond.
Rest, receive, respond. Yeah, which is very similar to the way that we train leaders, which I was super intrigued by, Mandy.
Oh, that's cool.
And so instead of respond, of just like responding kind of without really thinking about it, you're inviting us into this. And it is inviting us into participation in what God is doing. So if God, you know, we have to like lean into that, like you said, that there has to be this trust that God is actually up to something and I can participate and I, you know, but I have to relax. I have to let go of control first.
Right.
So there's something there's at least two steps before respond.
Yeah, but there still is response. Right. And that's really important, yeah. I think. Yeah. I think when we're in an era where we're very aware of abusive power in the church and, you know, celebrity pastors and all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. The funny thing is a lot of the cautions that I've heard about that actually weren't what I needed. So some people need to be told, don't try to be in control so much. Some people need to be told, you have agency, you need to step up. And and so if we're not careful, if we only speak one of those, we'll actually affirm the temptations for some people.
Yes.
So if you look at all of the many of the stories of the prophets throughout scripture, most of them are saying no to God. Most of them are avoiding their agency. And Jeremiah's is my favorite because in the first chapter of Jeremiah, God says, I will appoint you as my prophet. And Jeremiah says, I'm too young. I'm just a child. Mm-hmm. And God doesn't say what we hope in those situations was like, you know, you've got this, you're strong, you're clever, you're educated. God just turned his eyes back to God, you know, turned Jeremiah back to God and said, I am calling you. I am sending you. I will give you the words to speak. And so I think it was really a beautiful thing when I realized, you know, it began with setting aside my efforts at control, but there was also a point that was just as scary, which was picking back up agency in some form.
Yeah. Yep.
And so I used the language, we have a childlike and childish kind of distinction in our minds. We don't have the same with adultish and adult-like. And so I started to create that kind of language to say, we have to set aside our adultishness to be like a child, which is, you know, our efforts to be in control. We have to set aside our childishness to be like an adult in a healthy way, the childishness of passivity, in order to embrace that we do have some power and to not abuse it. So, that was helpful for me to realize, okay, the rest is not just checking out entirely for the rest of my life. The rest is learning how to set aside my own efforts at power in order to receive what power I do have in partnership with the power of God.
Yeah, I'm not sure this is why you created the word adultish, but I can't wait to use it on some people I know. I'll take all the blame.
You're doing the opposite of helping Matt is now.
Maybe that's an adultish thing to do. Maybe that's an adultish thing.
I wasn't going to say that, but...
Yeah, but that's... you can. Mandy, I'm noticing a few things here, and we've talked about this. We talked about this a little bit when we had you on the last time, but I'm noticing that most leaders get to two stages, and you're calling us to a third. Let me see if this taxonomy lines up with what you're talking about. The first is we sort of just lean into our ego, right? So we do, or we think, or we make things happen, and we kind of lean into that until we kind of see the limits of that, and even the damage that can do. Mm-hmm. And then when just maybe partially or mostly we see it. Oh, it horrifies us, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so we try to stay as far away from that as possible, right? So I've got a friend who's an Enneagram 8. He's like 6'4", and he spent the first half of his life just being a large, white Enneagram 8 dude, doing Enneagram 8 large, white man things.
Yeah.
And he saw, like in his mid-30s, he saw how awful that was, and he retreated from that because he didn't want to hurt people anymore or dominate and control them. So I think those are the two phases that most... Well, hopefully you get to stage two. Mm-hmm. Most of us get to, but the third phase you're calling us to is a reintegration and a maturation so that we're not simply staying away from how we could harm people, but we're pressing into our agency in a way that brings it as a gift for others.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think most of the healing comes when we're called to do hard things. And we have to somehow invite God to purify them. It's much easier to just avoid something than to do it well and to be healed from the ways we've abused it. And that grieves me so deeply for so many of my brothers in the mission because they still have gifts to share. And there's nothing inherently wrong with being a white man But so many, thankfully, I'm so blessed to know there's that humility and that repentance that is becoming so much, so evident in so many conversations I have, especially with guys, with white guys. But I also think the enemy could be having a field day in saying, okay, you have nothing now to offer. And I was actually really encouraged, if you're familiar with Richard Rohr's work, he did some amazing work on initiation rites for boys across the world. And it made me realize that, you know, our culture doesn't have initiation rites for men, but many other cultures have. The interesting thing is for women, you know, there's this thing that's just built into a woman's body that happens when she's a young teenager that just, I mean, I remember being 11 and watching the boys on the playground the day that I got my period and being like, oh, they're such children. They have no idea. Like, I'm 11 years old. I was just starting to feel good in myself. I'm starting to think I'm smart, I'm competent. And then you get smacked in the face with talking about life and death and blood, for goodness sakes, at 11, you know? Yeah. And there's this thing that your mom tells you is going to happen once a month for the next 40 or 50 years, and it's painful and it's embarrassing and you can't do anything about it. Like, it's humbling. But at the same time, you come to this place of like acceptance and of just getting on with it, and there's a strength that comes in that. And so Rohr, you know, describes this journey for men as the hero's journey, that it begins, I'm doing like an uphill angle here, it's an uphill like power, getting more and more strong and more powerful. And then there's a moment of crisis where, you know, you can't get pregnant, or you can't find someone to marry, or some crisis happens, usually young adulthood, and you have a choice then of it being, you know, a crash and burn, into something better, or just this onward struggle to just keep pushing with the ego. And he actually describes the opposite for women, that especially in the traditional way women have been raised, and I'd say this is probably still true for a lot of women, it starts with a downward kind of movement of you're born, and from there you're yes. taught lower, empty, serve other people. And this is true for me too, that there's a turning point, there's a moment of crisis which can become, again, still you have a choice of whether it's going to become an ego thing and a control thing, or whether that confrontation with your own lack of power can become a release into freedom. And so I think we all are confronted with those moments. The question is what we're going to do with them. And I think Merton's work is great here too, talking about false selves and true selves, that I think this is where we're invited to die to our false self, which we will at first think God is asking us to actually kill off something that is true to ourselves. Mm-hmm. And I think in making that distinction, we come to know our true selves more, because God will never actually call us to die to what is truly us. You know, C.S. Lewis uses this kind of stuff constantly in his imagery, you know, with the dragon scales being taken off, it's painful because we think it's our true self, but what God calls us to die to is our efforts at hiding and pretending to be something that we're not. And so praise him that although it's really painful, there's something true in the center of us. And Merton says there's a diamond, a point of pure light that is God's very name written in the heart of each one of us. I wish I had the quote in front of me because it's so beautiful. And there's 1,000 points, you know, there's all these points of light blazing in us all that we can't see. And I wish I could remember the quote. It's so beautiful. But just Google Merton and Diamond, and he basically trusts that there is something at the center of us that is God's name written in us. And if we would stop trying so hard, we might actually find it in ourselves.
The challenges and costs of leading others in the way of Jesus are high. Ministry life and leadership can be messy, painful, soul-crushing work. Pastors, church planters, and ministry leaders consistently face the ongoing temptation to care for the lives and hearts of everyone except themselves. But what if ministry leaders had the tools and encouragement to lead from a place of rest and wholeness? What if church planters developed a deep spirituality instead of skimming the surface? What if pastors took care of their bodies and had really meaningful friendships? What if missionaries paid attention to their emotional pain rather than avoiding it? All these reasons are why Matt Alexander started Soul Care Cohorts. Matt leads Soul Care Cohorts each semester for ministry leaders who want to grow in their health and wholeness. Each cohort is 10 sessions long and works through topics like emotional health, relational health, spiritual health, physical health, mental health, and vocational health. You can learn more about the next Soul Care Cohort by checking out the interest form in the show notes of this podcast episode.
This podcast is brought to you by Gravity Leadership Academy, our 10-month online training intensive for Christian leaders who want to root their life and leadership in God's love and bring lasting transformation to their culture. In Gravity Leadership Academy, you'll learn the real-life practicalities of how to notice God's presence and activity in and around you so you can participate more fully in God's life and mission and open up space for those around you to do so too. We've worked really hard to make this training in missional leadership practical and doable. To find out more about Gravity Leadership Academy, visit gravityleadership.com/academy.
You talked about, so the model that you lay out here is rest, receive, respond. And I feel like that those are the kinds of, like, that little piece of wisdom there that, man, you know, the journey for men is oftentimes different than the journey for women. And the word of wisdom for a man, you know, might be very different than the word of wisdom for a woman. I feel like that's wisdom born of this process. And so I get the impression as I read this book for you that this is an exploration of, like, what is this process of resting from control, right? And then receiving these unexpected gifts and then responding and sort of participating and watching kind of what God does on the other side of that. I guess one question I want to ask, this is really, I mentioned this earlier, it's really similar to the training that we do in Gravity Leadership Academy. And we kind of put those three moves for us are talked about as awareness, alignment, and action.
Mm, and wow. So
there's awareness.
You got the three A's and I've got the three R's.
You went the three R's. Yeah. we're both
I love it.
Alliterating. We can't help it, right?
It must be true. Alliterating. If it has alliteration.
Yeah, it must be true because it's alliterated.
But see, Mandy has the benefit of saying it with an Australian accent. So it's like 87% cooler and truer.
Well, you know what though? When you move back to a country where everybody sounds like you, you're just not cool anymore.
Yeah, you're just 30, normal now.
30 years down the drain.
Yeah, it's funny.
Sorry, Ben. I'm sorry, okay. Ben.
It's awareness, you got the three A's.
Awareness. There we go, the three A's. Okay. So I find then, so people learn how to become aware of what's going on underneath the surface, right? So instead of just like knee-jerking and trying to fix a problem, they're like, I wonder why this bothers me, or I wonder what's going on here, right? And then there's a process of alignment where I think is roughly analogous to what you talk about with receiving. We receive these unexpected gifts from God, and then we respond, right? So there is still this response. There's this act of faith that has to be practiced for us to kind of complete the cycle or to really kind of be doing God's will. And that is the moment that I notice that our old habits kick in. For most people that we train, and for me still, like the moment of response, the moment of, okay, it's time to do something, that's where it's really easy for us to revert back to our old imagination and take back control and try to make something happen and, you know, that kind of thing. So I don't know if you found that to be true, but I wonder if, you know, what can we learn? How can we learn to respond in ways that don't involve trying to control things? I don't know if you have examples of how this process has worked out in your life, for example.
It's huge, isn't it?
How to help people out of that.
Right. And I think the better we rest, the better we respond. And so for me, it kind of came, I stumbled on this by accident, and it's probably one of the most powerful things in my life, that there's a kind of emptying in the resting. And it might be like literally taking a whole day off or taking a whole week or month off. Or it might just be taking a breath to say, I'm connected. the spirit is in me, you know. Yeah. And you've been in meetings like I have where everything's tense, nobody has any answers, there's conflict everywhere, and then someone just says, can we pray, you know, and a different kind of air comes into the room. And it might only take 5 minutes, you know, and it might not resolve all your questions, but it just gives you new space. And so for me, it began with emptying, which is not something I was taught to do. And in fact, most of our faith in contemporary times is more consumer, like give me God, fill me God.
Accumulating.
Yeah. And scripture also talks about purging and pruning and purifying, all of which are about getting rid of things.
So
this feels like death to a consumerist culture. And I had no idea what life was behind it. But if we empty by confessing our desperate efforts to do things in our own strength, there's just more space. And I use the image often of, from 2 Corinthians 4 of Paul using the image of being clay vessels that carry this eternal glory. And we don't often feel that glory of God in us. And I think it's because we've got so much other junk in there that we're trying so hard in our own strength. And so we say, fill me, give me your spirit. I don't feel your spirit. And I feel like the spirit's down there somewhere squished under all the junk, just saying like, just give me some space. I'm already here, for goodness sakes. So I literally, and I have a prayer that I've made a video of that I can share a link to if you want to include it, of just taking the time to like feel myself as this clay vessel, this very weak, limited, cracked, ordinary clay vessel, and visualizing that I've just got these chunks of concrete inside of me that I've just kind of shoved in there to help fill up some space, but they're useless efforts at trying to control my kids and my church and the world and all the rest. And taking time every morning, because, you know, I wake up wanting to control the world too. Like I haven't overcome this either. Every morning, choosing to say once more, like, okay, I'm giving this to you. I'm giving this to you. I'm giving this to you. And it's like the spirit that's already in us is just like, ah, okay, I've got space now. And I like to visualize it like it's molten gold. And people who've watched Hobbit movies tell me it reminds them of the scene in the Hobbit movie where all the gold is just going everywhere. Like this molten gold, this unfading treasure that's in us that just now has space to just fill and seal up all the cracks and overflow, like not for our own selves alone, but to also be a blessing to the world. And what I say in the book is that the response is a natural outflow of the receiving, which is a natural outflow of the resting. And so the more that we've emptied in order to rest, the more that we've practiced the way of even responding out of the emptiness somehow, out of knowing that it's not our choice and our control. Yeah. But absolutely, you're right that like you want to rest so that you can have an agenda of what you're going to receive, and then you want to control the outcomes. And this was really powerful for me. I'll say this and then I'll finish the answer to your question. So we rest, we receive, we respond, and so we're doing things that we believe God has prompted us to do. And when it goes well, according to our expectation of success, we're like, yay, God, thank you. I understand now why you prompted me in that direction, and we go back to resting in Him. But when it doesn't go the way we expected and it goes into a place of suffering, you know, we're only here because of our obedience to God, and it just feels like death. Like, God, how could you bring me to this place? It didn't build the church. It didn't fix my family. It didn't answer my questions. Why would you bring me to this place? And this is where I really found so much comfort in being with my Catholic brothers and sisters, because they have Jesus on the cross everywhere you look. You know, like His obedience to the Father took Him to the cross.
Yeah.
And so resting and receiving and responding always takes us to the kingdom, but the kingdom is not always welcome in this world. And so there's a place even there where responding to the spirit within us, that's what takes martyrs to their death, you know. So it's not always, this is what I had to repent of as well, is thinking, well, if God's leading me to it, then it must always be successful.
Yeah.
But there's a way also that I think in Protestant circles, I hadn't been taught to find solidarity with Jesus in suffering as well, that also takes us closer to the kingdom and to needing the Father more and more.
Yeah, so the response, it has to be connected to the gifts that you've received in your rest.
Mm.
It has to be connected in some way. It can't just be this like, okay, well, that's enough rest. Time to get back to action.
Yes.
Yeah, it has to be this integrated into this new way of being.
Right.
That you talk about. Yeah. I wonder if... I wonder if... So I know that you recently... moved across the world to the other side of the world, and took a new job and left a ministry job in a country that you had been at for quite a while. And I'm wondering, as I found myself, I knew this about you, Mandy, and then I, as I was reading this book, I found myself wondering if part of this process was instrumental in you making this decision and moving in this direction.
Well, you asked me that. I'm glad you asked me that in an email before we jumped on here so that I could have some time to think about it, because I think you're really onto something there. And I hadn't even realized it myself that this move, we're from Australia. We never actually felt called to leave Australia for such a long period of time. We left originally to study. And I share some of that story in the book. And so we left for 10 years and we were gone for 30 years and we'd tried many times, and it was probably a source of some of our deepest suffering and questioning of God. Like, why have you taken us away for so long from our family, and our kids are growing up without their grandparents and cousins? And we also, it was partly just, we wanted to be home, but it was partly a sense of the need here, that we wanted to be a part of the mission here. And so we had always planned and tried to find work here and had several things in place that had fallen through over the years. And so in the middle of the pandemic, you know, I think I've heard this for so many people in ministry, things just hit the fan. Like, there were so many ways.
Yeah.
I think in a way it's that, like, things that were stuck were also released. Like, it's like the ground shook and suddenly all the roots were somehow like just disrupted. And that felt really disruptive, but also there was a strange kind of really uncomfortable release in it for so many people that I know, that you're just like, oh, you're thinking about things in a different way and different things become possible. And so I do think that you're right, though, that ideally, we would have liked to have everything set up before we move and take a long time to go through the process of such a huge transition. Like, we've been here for 6 months now and we still aren't finished with the transition of establishing a new life here. It's massive. And we're from here.
Right.
And so I think, yeah, you're right that, like, I've made smallish and medium-sized choices based on childlike instincts before. I've never made such a huge transition, and I'm actually feeling really like anxious in my stomach just even remembering it, like to leap into a space that really felt totally unknown, because we didn't really have a life set up here. We felt like it was time to be finished in the US. That was fairly sure, but still that was just instinct, you know. That was something unseen and not even in words. So that was something we were pretty sure of, but to step away from something without knowing what you're stepping into and to put everything at risk. We left our daughter behind as well, and that breaks my heart. She's a grown-up, by the way.
Good. Yeah.
We didn't just dump her at
She's 6 years old.
Yeah.
She's thrifty, though. She'll be fine.
She'll figure it out.
Yeah, I remember watching, is it called We Are the Champions on Netflix? It's a TV show that that explores all these different crazy competitions around the world. It has the guy from the Office, doing the voiceover. Anyway, it has this one woman on there who's a cheese rolling champion. You might have seen shorts of this. Oh my goodness, you have to watch.
Cheese rolling?
Yeah, so there's a little town in England that's a cheese making town, and they have this ancient tradition of having a race every year of rolling a big wheel of cheese. Like, it's bigger than, mm-hmm. you know, it's right, this big, right. like the size of a yeah. wheel of a car, of cheese right. down a huge hill. It's almost a cliff. It's so steep. And they have the townspeople chase it down the hill. Oh, and gosh. This one woman, she is just my hero. She launches herself. She's the champion of chasing this cheese. And oh my goodness, her name is somebody early. I can't remember her name, but you can Google her. And she just like somersaults and bounces and just like with abandon throws herself down, launches herself down the hill after this cheese. And that image was in my head the whole time I was doing this. Oh my God. And I wrote a little blog post about like self-preservation is overrated. Mm. And so I was at a place where I was like, you know, we all have, I think we miss out on something of Jesus' sacrifice when we only think about his physical death, because in a way we're not physically dying, so we don't get exactly what that means for us. Mm. But he died in so many ways before he ever got to the cross. He died to his self-preservation, yeah. social deaths, relational deaths, existential deaths. You know, Gethsemane is a death of its own. Mm-hmm. And so many ways that we live, like our life is not just our physical body being alive. It's our sense of social equilibrium and sense of ourselves and where we belong in the world and how who we think we are and our identity and our work and our family and all that stuff. Mm. And so to launch yourself into some huge thing without fully understanding what it is, like I've just done, it feels like death. You feel like you're going to die. You're losing, you know, you're walking away yeah. from a role that you've really found meaning and purpose in. You're walking away from relationships that you've found comfort in. And you, there's some way in which you think it's you're going to die. And I realized, like, there's that saying, Jim Elliot, I think, the missionary who sadly went to his death soon after joining the mission, says something about, you know, he is no fool who gives up what he cannot keep to gain what he cannot lose. And so I just came to a point where I was like, if I'm going to do it, I'm just going to do it. Like, I'm not just going to like edge down the hill and hope I can find the cheese. I'm like, if you're going to do it, like, you might as well do it with some yeah. like panache.
Right. Yeah.
Why not cast yeah. yourself in wholeheartedly yeah. to this thing that God is calling mm. you to, even though it's terrifying? And my stomach is in knots just even feeling it, because in some ways we're still there. Like, we haven't entirely landed yet.
Yeah, yeah. It's still fresh.
Talk about alliteration. Champion cheese chaser.
Champion cheese chaser. Mandy Smith came on the podcast today. Mandy is a champion cheese chaser.
That's hilarious.
That is a hilarious image, Mandy.
I need to find you really, that video.
Yeah, yeah.
We'll have to maybe we could link it.
Maybe we can put it in the show notes if we can find it. Yep. Yes. Yeah. So I think what's striking me as you share that story, Mandy, is just that all of that, making this huge decision, you know, like running, falling down the hill, chasing the cheese, like was rooted in this process for you. Well, I think so many of us are hungry for, if we're going to do that kind of a move, we need certainty,
yeah,
right? We
yeah.
need God to write on the wall. We need 13 friends to confirm it. I need an anonymous prophetic word. I need to get some money in the mail. And you know what I mean? Like, we want all of these assurances that this is certainly God's will. God is making it very, very clear. But you're saying, you know what's like, there's a, in this new way of kind of learning and trusting God, it's not, you don't always get certainty.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes you get a hunch.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes you get an instinct.
Yeah, yeah.
Sometimes you get a feeling that you know it's right.
Right.
And I can point to, I mean, as you're sharing your story, I can think of like three or four times in my life when when I share the story with people, I'm always like, you know, I don't know why we made this decision. In mm-hmm. hindsight, it doesn't seem very smart.
Yeah. yeah.
But we were so sure.
Mm-hmm.
Like, just we felt clear, you know, right. that this was what the Lord was doing. And I think it's part of the fruit of moving through the process that you outline in this book.
But our culture doesn't really teach us to trust those parts of ourselves.
No, no. Yeah. It seems like you're being an idiot or foolish.
Yeah, which we are, I think.
yeah, in the best ways.
Yeah.
Well, Mandy, maybe we can close this out by speaking to maybe somebody's listening and they are they're hearing about this, you know, the lovely ways that you speak about trusting God in this, and you know, they want to chase the wheel of cheese down the hill, but they're worried, they're fearful that if they give themselves over to resting and receiving and responding, if they let go of control, they're going to accidentally abandon the gospel, or they're going to accidentally make a terrible decision. Mm-hmm. They're going to believe something false if they give themselves over to this new way of being in the world, this new way of learning. Mm. What would you say to them?
Yeah, I would first of all acknowledge, like, that's real. I don't want to minimize in any way that fear. At the same time, I think what I had to come to was a trust that God is one. And that he, right now, I can't see how he's one, how God in my church, God in my body, God in my family, God in the world are all the same God. But it doesn't mean he's not one. It just means I can't see it yet. And it takes a deep trust to trust that he's not confused and he's not in conflict with himself. He is good in every way. And if he's working in me, he knows I'm married. He knows I've got kids. He knows I'm part of a church. He knows all of my connections, and he knows what that will mean for everything else in the world and in my life. And that doesn't bring certainty necessarily, but it gives a deep peace that maybe he sees things I don't see. And there's something he has in store that I can't see yet. The answer's in a story, and the story isn't finished, is what I say to myself over and over again. It's a line from a quote from a poet that I probably should learn to pronounce his name, Padraig O'Tuama. It looks like he's Irish, T-U-A-M-A. But I have that on a post-it note on my wall. The answer's in a story, and the story isn't finished, which sounds like the gospel. You know, like we're never going to really fully know the fullness of the story, but I have to trust that it's a beautiful story and it's a huge story. And when we're in it, we're not going to see it yet, but we are in it.
Well, amen.
Amen.
Yeah. We'll pass the baskets again, and we'll take communion again. No, I'm kidding, Candy.
I didn't get any words for you either, Ben. So
next time we'll have.
I'll be in touch later.
Yeah,
Ben, you need to listen to this. I think you need to listen to this one again. There's a few words for you in this. something about cheese and a downhill race.
Racing downhill for cheese. I'm in. Again, friends, the book is called Unfettered, Imagining a Childlike Faith Beyond the Baggage of Western Culture. Mandy, thanks so much for joining us today.
Oh, it was so much fun. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for joining us for this episode of the Gravity Leadership Podcast. Our show is produced by Ben Sternke, Matt Tebby, and Ben Hardman. Aaron Sternke does our mixing and mastering. You can check out his work at aaronsternke.com. If you find our podcast helpful, share it with your friends in person and on social media. And don't forget to rate and review us online, as well as subscribe so you don't miss an episode. You can join our Gravity community for free at gravityleadership.com/join. You'll get our latest content delivered straight to your inbox, as well as an email most Fridays with curated links to articles we found interesting or helpful. To join us, go to gravityleadership.com/join. And hey, we'd love to hear from you. Ask a question, make a comment, send us an idea, a recommendation, recipe, whatever. You can email us at podcast@gravityleadership.com. Catch you next time.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.